Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to this Dev Dispatch podcast, particularly focused on the AfCFTA, which is the African Continent of Free Trade Agreement, particularly focused on the protocol on trading goods. The African Continent of Free Trade Area has been vouched as the greatest thing to ever happen to Africa, with Africa's potential GDP of 2.5 trillion and a marketplace of 1.2 billion people. This promises to be a vanguard moment for the continent. Africa started trading under the AfCFTA on the 1st of January. And under the AfCFTA, we have seven protocols that are supposed to be concluded. Right now, in phase one of the negotiations, three protocols have been concluded. That's a protocol on trading goods, protocol on trading services, and a protocol on rules and procedures on the settlement of disputes. For today, we're going to focus on the protocol on trading goods. My name is Ivan Ojakolo. So my guest today will be Juliet Aigbe, a seasoned SME practitioner, because it is important that we bring down this legalese to the common person. So Juliet will help us in understanding the practicalities of some of those things, as I will also be contributing on the legal side as a trade lawyer and a trade practitioner. Juliet, can you introduce yourself?
My name is Juliet Aigbe. I run a business in Lagos, Nigeria. My business is about 17 years old, still an SME. So Buff Bakeries Limited is a parent company for three brands. We have the Cake Flair brand, which is like a cake shop. We do Buff Factor cakes. And then we also have the Chef Jules cake mixes and pancake mix, which is our latest exportable products, which we intend to export to other parts of the world. We're currently in all the ShopRite stores across Nigeria, and we intend to go ECOWAS and then the rest of Africa. Then our third project right now is called Femex.Trade. It's actually an NGO, an association of small businesses in Lagos, Nigeria, are coming together to make their businesses structured in a way that they can export their products to the rest of the world as well. So I'm coordinating that. And I think Femex for me is the combination of all my entrepreneurial journey, bringing other women together. I'm here today to contribute and also to learn regarding the AfCFTA trade protocols. Thank you.
Thank you, Juliet. So the format is going to be a sort of a Q&A. I'll go through the legalese of the agreement and look at the provisions and what they mean and interpret them with a legal perspective, and Juliet will be asking questions. So I hope this will be beneficial to you. Enjoy.
I look forward to it as well.
This protocol has 32 articles in total. And importantly, we shall look at about 28 of them, where we shall dig deep and find out what they actually mean. The definition section is important. We shall come back and look at it later. Let's go to Article 2. Article 2 is on the objectives of the protocol. These objectives are pursuant to the objectives in the main agreement. That's the foundation agreement. But particularly, this protocol on trading goods provides that. It intends to create a liberalized market in trading goods in accordance with Article 3 of the agreement. And that is perhaps the essence of why Africa has gone into the AfCFTA. Specifically, it intends to progressively eliminate tariffs. That is important. They use the word progressive. It doesn't mean automatically that January 1st, all African countries eliminate their tariffs. No, it's progressive. I think there have been studies that show that if only 20% of these non-tariff barriers could be overcome by Africa, that in and of itself will increase intra-African trade even more than a complete elimination of tariffs, that's the taxes. The amount of time that goods spend on the road, for example, all those crazy things that policemen at a border post will try and do and extort from traders or what have you, if only we could reduce that by 20%, we'll go to over 65% intra-African trade. So trade facilitation is another important thing. Trade facilitation basically is simplification and creation of efficiencies in trade, at the borders, at customs. Do you have one-stop border posts? Do you have reporting mechanisms? Do traders have access to information prior? Say, if I want to export into South Africa, can I go somewhere and look at the information on the tariffs and see what taxes will be charged on this? So that is important. We shall go back, we shall look at that later in more detail. Enhance cooperation in the areas of technical barriers to trade. The other objective is development and promotion of regional and continental value chains. And also to enhance socioeconomic development, diversification, and industrialization across Africa. Article 3 on the scope of this agreement shall apply to trading goods between the states. Then, under this protocol, there are 9 annexes that have been concluded. Because trade itself is a very broad subject, so you need specific documents, legal documents, to provide for certain things. So importantly, under this, we have Annex 1, which will be a schedule on tariff concessions. That is important because the essence of an FTA like this one is tariff reduction, tariff elimination, liberalization of trade. So there'll be a schedule providing for tariff concessions. Say a country says, on this good and this good, we're going to reduce taxes. But on this one, no. This one is an important product that we cannot just reduce taxes. It's important for our domestic industries. We have to protect them. So there'll be a tariff concessions that shows that on this one, we've reduced. On this one, we've reduced. What the FCFTA says, the Secretariat has said, is that countries will be obligated to reduce up to 90% of their tariffs. So Annex 3 is on rules of origin. That's another important subject. And the first two annexes is actually the problem. The protocol goods has been concluded under phase one, but the two annexes on schedules of tariff concessions and rules of origin have not been completed because those are very sticky areas that need further deliberations, further concessions, and further negotiations. Basically, rules of origin refers to the criteria needed to determine the national source of product. So there are different rules of origin. Say, for example, under AGOA, African Growth Opportunity Act, there are rules of origin there. Under the ESC treaty, under the SADC, the rules of origin. So the rules of origin are important to show where the product is coming from, what criteria will be used to determine if this product should get a tariff reduction. So those are a very important subject. So the first two annexes are very, 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 very important and contentious. And they will take us some time, I believe, before we conclude. Annex 3 is on customs cooperation and mutual administrative assistance. Annex 4 is on trade facilitation. Annex 5 is on non-tariff barriers. Annex 6 is on tariff barriers to trade. Annex 7 is on sanitary and phytosanitary measures. Annex 8 is on transit. And Annex 9 on trade remedies. So those ones shall be adopted upon the integration of this protocol. So it shall be adopted as part of this protocol and shall form critical parts of this protocol. Now let's go into the meat of the agreement. The meat of the agreement starts with Article 4 on what is called the most favored nation treatment. This principle, together with the principle that we follow it called national treatment, are basically the bedrocks of international trade and are enshrined in the multilateral trading system under the World Trading Organization. Importantly, the distinction here is that there's a difference between the definition here and the definition under the World Trade Organization. Under the World Trade Organization, the most favored nation treatment principle is to the effect that if a country gives favorable treatment or a benefit to a state party or a member state under the World Trade Organization, it should accord the same treatment to another. It should not discriminate. Like part two, the heading here is termed as non-discrimination. But let me read this particular provision and you see the difference. Article 4.1. State parties shall accord most favored nation treatment to one another in accordance with Article 18 of the agreement. Now, Article 18 of the agreement refers to Article 18 of the foundational agreement. And under that Article 18 of that foundational agreement, it talks about there shall be a deliberate endeavor to grant continental preferences on a reciprocal basis. That is important. So the most favored nation principle here deals basically with preferences to state parties under the AFCFTA on a reciprocal basis. So reciprocity under international trade is another very important principle. And reciprocity basically means that you grant mutual concessions in tariff rates, quotas, and other commercial restrictions. So there should be a certain level of mutuality in terms of benefits. So for example, the MFN principle does not apply automatically under the AFCFTA. For it to apply, another country or another member state party has to do the same, has to offer the same benefit as the other party. So a party will not give you a benefit unless you are granting it a benefit. Well, under the World Trade Organization, it's automatic. As long as you're a member of WTO, you can have it. There's no reciprocity that is required. So that is important. That is important for us to note. Article 4.2 provides nothing in this protocol shall prevent a state party from concluding or maintaining preferential trade arrangements with third parties, provided that such trade arrangements don't impede or frustrate the objectives of this protocol, and that any advantage, concession, or privilege granted to a third party under such arrangements is extended to other state parties on a reciprocal basis. That word is back, reciprocal. So I think you've heard recently of how certain countries in Africa are concluding economic partnership agreements with the UK, the US, and what have you. That has caused a lot of hullabaloo, especially as far as the FCFTA is concerned. But guess what? The FCFTA is here telling you under Article 4.2 that nothing prevents a state party from concluding a preferential trade arrangement with a third party, as long as it does not frustrate the objectives of the protocol. So what the FCA is trying to do here is to give a pragmatic, practical situation, because intra-African trade is very little. It's very small. It's a small rate, 15%. And then you have an opportunity to deal with another country, which is going to allow you market access into a bigger economy. And that will bring an advantage to your country. So it's trying to be practical here as much as possible by allowing state parties to conclude these things. However, there's an argument that's going on, and someone has filed a case in the East African Court of Justice. The East African Community purports to be a customs union. So under a customs union, parties are sort of deemed to work together, to be a sort of one when it comes to such economic arrangements. Even under the World Trade Organization, where an economic bloc is a customs union. For example, if the AFCFTA becomes a customs union, whatever deals, arrangements, trade arrangements, they will conclude with China, the USA, the UK will have to be done as one. So someone has gone to court under the East African Court of Justice, arguing that Kenya has breached the East African Community Treaty by doing that. Three is, nothing in this protocol shall prevent two or more state parties from extending to one another preferences which aim at achieving the objectives of this protocol among themselves. For example, the FCFTA is going on, then SADC and ECOWAS decide to enter into an arrangement and become SADC, ECOWAS, AFTA. That this protocol does not bar countries to get into those things. Okay, for notwithstanding the provisions of paragraphs 2 and 3 of this article, a state party shall not be obliged to extend another state party trade preferences extended to other state parties or third parties before the entry into force of the agreement. The state party shall afford opportunity to the other state parties to negotiate the preferences granted herein on a reciprocal basis, taking into account levels of involvement of the state. That is also another important limb to the construction of this article, taking into account levels of development of the state. The world of trade tries to recognize as much as possible the sovereignty of states, but it's a very controversial concept. So we have also another foundational principle under the foundational agreement is flexibility and special and differential treatment. So there's a certain flexibility that is there. Transparency and disclosure of information, that is important. If we're going to trade, why doesn't your revenue authority have a proper website that shows a trader that wants to bring their goods to a certain country, that shows them the rules of origin, that shows them tariff concessions, that shows them whatever information they want? That is important. Transparency and disclosure of information. And that feeds into so many things, which we shall go through later. Before I proceed, are there any questions that should be answered?
I have loads of questions. However, it's important to let you also break down some of the protocols further so that the questions can maybe be self-answer or they'll still be lingering. Maybe I should just wait for you to go through the other protocols.
Okay, let me go through a couple of articles then. Yeah. It's also important that we ask the questions as we go.
Yes, okay. Okay, cool.
I have a question about what we discussed so far, that's okay.
Yeah, you did mention progressively eliminating tariffs.
Yes.
And I'm thinking, okay, I don't really know the existing tariffs that exist because I've only done interstates within Nigerian states. I haven't gone to like a place like Ghana, which I intend to do. So for us to even begin to initiate continental trade, how do I do that? Do I need to have feet on ground in the other member states? Is there any AFCFTA platform that, you know, new entrants go through to kind of know the dynamics of how continental trade works? Or should that be left internally within each political structure of each country?
Okay. For starters, anyone can take advantage of it. FCFTA basically means that even I, as long as I know that on this good and this good, I can take it into Nigeria at a lower tax, I can do that. But this is why it's important to have this information out, is that, and of course, even countries like mine, like in Uganda, we're also sleeping, and countries like Ghana, countries like, and even Nigeria to some extent, because I've been following. There are a couple of organizations that have come up, and perhaps after here we can discuss, because I also try and see how I can get into them an organization called Afro Champions, which has positioned itself very close to the secretariat in Ghana. It's a friend of mine runs another one called AFCFTA, Policy Network. I think there's another one called AETrade. AETrade is targeting electronic trade. Like I mentioned, there's a protocol on e-commerce that is supposed to be completed in the third phase, but I think it has been moved up to the second phase because they're trying to fast-track AFCFTA as much as possible. But also importantly, what this means is the use of the word progressive is also a problem, eh? Because you see, traders are excited. They won't start. The word progressive. And countries, you know, African countries, take their time.
Yeah.
They take their time. I think at the launch ceremony of the AFCFTA, the secretariat had mentioned that I think there are about 40 countries that have already submitted their tariff concessions. And the problem also from the government side is that they don't communicate so much. They don't bring the information down to the common trader, the common SME. So people don't have this information. They don't know what has been liberalized. But also what the AFCFTA has done is they came up with a platform. It's called tradebarriers.com. If you go there right now, you'll be amazed by what's going on. Tradebarriers.com. Everything is lowercase. It'll also feed into our article on implementation, monitoring, and evaluation. So that's article, should be article 31, actually. So they've created all these platforms, some of these platforms, where people can report. For example, if you're trying to get a good into Namanga border between Kenya and Tanzania, and there's a non-tariff barrier, say a policeman has asked for a bribe, you're allowed, you go there and report that, guess what, this and this and this, this has happened. This guy is trying to block trade. There's a non-tariff barrier happening here. There's a good that has been refused into our country because of this reason, which is not legitimate. So you go there and report, then there's an official that is supposed to pick up on that information and send it to the secretariat. Well, the secretariat now to act upon it. But of course, the practicalities of that, we're yet to see if indeed people will be acting upon that. But I can assure you right now, if you went there right now, you'll find that many traders are already reporting. They're already reporting these non-tariff barriers, these trade barriers. So there is that also where traders are actually trying to take advantage of the AFCFTA already and get to know what's happening. Like I mentioned, the RECs, the Regional Economic Committees, are building blocks towards the AFCFTA. And what happens, many traders, even us here in the African community, where we are praised as being the best performing trade bloc, there's a lot that people don't know. And of course, there's also countries that just arbitrarily, against their obligations under these trade agreements, just go against them and just come up with funny policies and just block goods and what have you arbitrarily. But there's information that is important. If I'm to go into SADC, what am I supposed to do? If I'm in COMESA and South Africa and Uganda, part of COMESA, what preferential trade schemes are there? So information for me is the biggest problem. So it's important to bring information down to the SME as much as possible. Yeah, I don't know if I'm trying to answer your question.
Yes, I mean, it's so much information to digest. I'm noting them down.
But importantly, for me, I look at these discussions like this as a start toward helping our traders take advantage. I can assure you now.
I'm thinking maybe we could also have like a WhatsApp group where this the Q&As will be evident. So if you have questions regarding this, you know, something like if an FAQ sort of link to help break the protocols and then answer, maybe even give case studies to see, okay, or scenario painting, so people can practically see these things and then know how to apply it.
Yes, that is important. Okay, so from there, I have mentioned a very important thing in that article on MFN. MFN is most favored nation. That one, that's a different definition from the World Trade Organization. And actually, if you went to the definition section of the protocol on trading goods, there's no definition of MFN. That is deliberate, because the MFN is a different MFN from the World Trade Organization. This MFN only applies to member states or state parties under the AFCFTA that are providing mutual reciprocity on different arrangements. While for the World Trade Organization, it's automatic. As long as you member everything, MFN, you dare not give the same benefits to one country as you're giving to the other one, then someone can hold you accountable. So that is a very important one that we should take advantage of.
Okay, I watched a clip. The Ghanaian president was talking to the Swiss government, and he did mention that Ghana will no longer be exporting raw materials to Swiss. See, they want to actually make sure that they're able to cater for the next generation, because he actually did mention the AFCFTA. I'm thinking, so the AFCFTA is just for Africans, right? Like continental trade within African member states. Does it also cut across Western worlds, Europe and America and Asia. Does he extend to that as well?
That president could be wrong or could be right, but I think he's wrong. Because you see, the AfCFTA did not intend for protectionism, did not intend to cut off Africa from the world. The AfCFTA is just Africa saying, we have a lacuna here, we have a shortage of trade among ourselves, so we should improve it. So it does not mean that AfCFTA is cutting itself off from the world. For example, let me just read for you some definitions of AfCFTA. Definition 1A, anti-dumping agreement, means the World Trade Organization agreement on the implementation of Article 6 of the GATT. So it is referring to the World Trade Organization. Harmonized system means a harmonized commodity description and coding system established by International Convention on the Harmonized Commodity Description and Coding System. It is referring to an international body. KBT agreement means the World Trade Organization agreement on technical barriers to trade. That itself shows you that AfCFTA was not meant for Africa alone. AfCFTA is just saying, let us do this, let us trade among ourselves. MFN under Article 4 that I just went through. Article 4.2, nothing in this protocol shall prevent a state party from concluding or maintaining preferential trade arrangements with third parties. That is why Kenya is entering into economic partnership agreements with the USA, with the UK. Mauritius entered into one with China the other day. So it's not saying that AfCFTA is blocking the rest of the world. No, we are saying we want to work with the world as we work within ourselves. Let's put our house in order to enable us to have a better bargaining power in the multilateral trading system. That is why it aims towards a customs union, which means that we shall be presenting our trade issues collectively. We shall have one customs union with a common customs tariff. So in other words, if someone is entering Africa through Port Harcourt, they don't have to pay taxes again. So it is not cutting us off. I think that is a protectionist measure. But though, again, I don't know if we should go to certain sections. The World Trade Organization and the multilateral trading system allows sort of protectionist measures. For example, there's what they call trade remedies and safeguard measures. And these we shall look at later. Article 17, anti-dumping and countervailing measures. Subject to the provisions of this article, nothing in this protocol shall prevent state parties from applying anti-dumping and countervailing measures. In applying this article, state parties shall be guided by the provisions of Annex 9 or trade remedies and AfCFTA guidelines on implementation.
So is that page 12 you're reading?
Article 17.
Okay.
In as much as multilateral trade or trade allows countries to trade among themselves, there are situations where countries are allowed to levy certain taxes beyond, say, if we have agreed to reduce tariffs on a certain good. Then some country comes and dumps a good, or some trader dumps a good into Nigeria or Uganda. You know what dumping is?
Yes.
So dumping, basically, definition of dumping would be someone selling a good below the market price. So you impose a higher tariff than has been agreed on that good.
But hold on, that's a very important point you just raised, because we have limited corporations that are bigger, have more muscle, financial muscle. They can tend to crash the price if they envisage competition coming on board. So is that what you call dumping?
Dumping is a very common thing. And because of things like smuggling out of you, there's a lot of dumping that happens, especially in Africa. Now, I'm going to answer your question specifically with the next one. Let me first answer what dumping is. So dumping, you're allowed to do what they call countervailing measures. Sorry, anti-dumping duty. That is a higher rate that is agreed under a preferential trade scheme. Or when it comes to what they call countervailing measures. So countervailing means that there are certain subsidies. I don't know if you've heard of subsidies in trade.
Yes.
Where the government deliberately goes ahead and supports a certain industry, give it muscle to enable it to thrive on the global stage. So if it is clear and you're sure that the country has been doing that, you're allowed to apply what they call countervailing, a higher tariff on that good, because the good has gotten a lot of support in terms of loans, in terms of grants from government and what have you. So you're allowed to do that. That is one. Now, there's what they call safeguards. So safeguards basically means that you interpret it in a literal way. A country is trying to safeguard its economy or industry. So this means that the country has realized that, guess what? There is this good or there is goods that are threatening our local infant industries. And that is what traders are worried about when the FCTA first came into place. They were like, but won't these big conglomerates come and put us out of business? So you're allowed to safeguard your economy by imposing higher tariffs on, or even totally block it from entering your market. So, for example, which example can I give?
Cocoa. Yeah. That was probably what the Ghanaian president was saying. Something like that.
So you safeguard your economy by putting in place what they call safeguard measures. Safeguard measure can even be a blockade, a temporary blockade, or even a total blockade on a certain good that comes into an economy. But however, there are qualifications for that. You cannot just arbitrarily do it. There must be certain measures that are put in place. You must have undertaken investigations, for example, with the qualifications under international trade and even under the FCFTA that allow you to undertake that measure. Actually, there's another keyword they use, that it must be causing serious injury. You must qualify that with thorough investigations. It must be causing serious injury to a light domestic industry. For example, the Kenyans have been blocking a couple of goods coming to their market from the ESE, milk, maize, poultry from the rest of East Africa, arguing that they are trying to protect their industries. But there have been arbitrary blockades. They didn't give any serious evidence. And that also leads us to what they call SPS measures. When it comes to things concerning animals and food and what have you, there are what they call sanitary and phytosanitary measures that can be taken. So there's an SPS agreement under the World Trade Organization that provides for that. And also here at the AFCFTA, one of the annexes to the Protocol on Trading Goods provides for SPS. However, SPS is also qualified. So, but there's actually particular provisions that we shall reach later. I don't know if it sort of answers your questions.
Yeah. So, can I just chip in a little bit? Nigeria has like the largest economy in West Africa. And I looked at the population of even my target markets in a place like Accra, Ghana. You know, I mean, that's like 28 million in Ghana and then compared to 200 million in Nigeria. So I'm feeling if I want to take my goods to, say, Ghana, wouldn't there be something like a protectionist attitude to the product? Maybe they put on higher documentation requirements just to frustrate the influx of Nigerian goods into... Each time I talk to my friends outside Nigeria, they keep saying, we're a small country. You guys are going to bring your goods here. And so I feel disadvantaged if I want to go to other small African countries. Because for me, it's not even about the headcounts. It's about the target markets. If I have a niche product and my niche extends to certain countries, I'm just kind of aggregating niches, not essentially selling to everybody in that country. So is there a sort of, I think I should just let you go through the protocols so the questions can just make sense.
You can clarify your question. Just clarify it.
I'm just saying, like, won't there be, like, this suspicion, this antitrust approach saying they're coming to take over our market? Because what you just mentioned about the maize thing, we've heard that. I tried moving some of my goods actually to Accra, Ghana, because ECOWAS is actually almost like a free trade zone. Can take goods across without tariff. But I have not been able to do that because of the politics. I have to go through their own FDA as well, even though I have my NAFDAC certifications. So it feels like there's no unitized body that says, okay, let's have a standardized documentation for moving goods across countries.
You know, that is a very big problem. First of all, you must understand that trade agreements are just an enabling framework. It is up to us to make these things work. So there's a politics there which is quite sad, and it is, as far as I'm concerned, very arbitrary. You can have the lowest tariffs in the world, but if you're say rules of origin are very strict, then there's a problem. Traders will not enjoy themselves. And also, like I mentioned earlier, it is quite sad, but there should be qualifications. If you're going to block someone's good, there should be a qualification, proper evidence of why you're blocking them. It should not be arbitrary. That is why there's a protocol on settlement of disputes. For example, under the ESC, East African Community, there's a court of justice. And that court of justice has been biting. For example, when Uganda levied a higher tax on cigarettes that were coming through Uganda, higher tax on them than they were levying on the domestic cigarettes. So the cigarettes from Kenya were levying a higher VAT tax. Someone went to the South African Community, and that was declared contrary to the treaty, and they got their money. In Rwanda, the government took over someone's mall arbitrarily.
Wow.
They were ordered to pay him $500,000. That is why it is important to have a proper dispute settlement system, because, you know, traders are sure that in case there's a breach, in case someone messes up my business, I have recourse somewhere. I have recourse to an impartial, effective, and certain dispute settlement procedure. That's why it's important for the AFCFTA to empower as much as possible the dispute settlement body. I like the AFCFTA's language of saying the regional economic communities are the building blocks towards the AFCFTA. So in other words, you can go to another court. You can go to an ECOWAS Court of Justice, or you can go to the East Africa Court of Justice.
Sorry, Irene, it just feels so challenging saying all this, go to courts. Isn't that like dead on arrival for the SME? Shouldn't there be like a political will in place to help SMEs kind of level up the gap between established corporations and then the SMEs? Because the whole idea is for the SMEs to also be able to leverage on this trade agreement. Should I just stay in my zone? Because I'm thinking, for the SMEs, when they encounter issues like this, is that the body that's going to resolve these disputes? Are they going to be local bodies or international bodies, or is it the AU bodies? Where do you find them? True. What about the court system? The court system is very laid back and they take a long period of time. Your goods might even expire before you get the court injunctions to go ahead and clear it.
That is true. And that is why I encourage that whether there is a dispute involving a breach of a treaty, a regional integration treaty, you go to the regional court. For example, I'll give you the wording of the East African Community. It says, where a dispute that arises and it touches on the breach of the treaty, the court is supposed to refer that matter. So if, for example, an SME businessman mistakenly filed in a domestic court, that court has an obligation to sort of wash its hands off that matter and send it to the regional court. The regional courts are a lot more efficient because, one, they have lesser disputes, but also they have sort of have time limits within which to resolve their matters. It is sort of different from when you have a domestic court where a judge will be more relaxed and he has a backlog and matters. So there's a sort of more efficiency in those courts as compared to our courts.
What about the operational costs involved in litigation?
Well, that's another issue, and it's also a major issue for SMEs. I mean, an SME may not have paid for a lawyer. But you see, there's always a way things can be done. At the end of the day, negotiate with your lawyer and you find a way.
So you already painted a picture of SMEs as weaker underdogs because other corporations are not going to back down because SMEs were trying to make it the level playing field. So we're already approaching these as weaker underdogs. So I'm saying, how do we strengthen these SMEs to play at that level?
For me,
that question is still nagging.
That is where these regional integration initiatives become a problem because, at the end of the day, the politicians must make it work. If the systems are not working properly, then regional integration is just some pipe dream or something like that. But again, it's a work in progress as far as I'm concerned, because even the EU, which we thought was, before you know it, it was Brexit. But we need more leaders at the top who are more interested in furthering.
But we know this is not really that existent in Africa at the moment. Yes, there's agitation for it, but so far, political will is still not there to build us up to speed. I have been trying to rise above the system here, even in Nigeria, and I realize that a lot of things that we do here, they're just lip services. I've been very aggressive into going through government agencies to see how do we get things done. The sheer bureaucracy of getting past, even getting the right documents in place, sometimes it just takes months or even years if you're not careful. So I feel like those are the fundamental issues. I keep seeing my own problem as a local business in my country, seeing that I still need to get past the systemic lack of political will of my own country. I put my foot on ground to see what's going on, how I can take advantage of what resources, opportunities are there. And I'm still like not able to harness those open doors. And I'm very optimistic that the more I keep pushing, maybe I'll probably spend more resources and more efforts to try and break through. For example, let's take things like price fluctuations, for example. I mean, 3 months ago, dollar was not what it is now. So you see the dollar, the change in pricing and cost of Forex and everything even affects shipping costs and the rest of it. Because even if you take off tariff from the products, progressively, you still have to ship the shipping costs and all of that. Isn't that another set of challenges that one has to grapple with as SMEs get into the continental free trade areas?
Like I said, trade agreements only provide an enabling framework at the end of the day. it is up to us and our countries to make these things work. Because the legalese on the paper and is actually what is actually going on. But again, I don't think you should lose hope, because at the end of the day, we are our own enemies. Why don't we trade among ourselves, for example, but we want to trade with them, the rest of the world? Very, very interesting. Yeah?
Very true.
Okay, Article 5. A state party shall accord to products imported from other state parties no less favorable treatment than accorded to like domestic products of national origin after the imported products have been cleared by customs. So in other words, if, like I mentioned the example of Uganda, the cigarettes that were being taxed at a certain rate, then the imported cigarettes that were coming from Kenya were taxed at a higher rate. That was against the national treatment policy. National treatment says treat them as if they're the same products, if they are like products. That means cigarette for cigarette, shoes for shoes, cars for cars. But of course, this must be under this preferential scheme. But importantly, if you differentiate between this national treatment provision here under this export control trading goods as compared to the national treatment, the MFN definition above, you'll see that the MFN definition above does not refer to the World Trade Organization at all. Well, this one refers to the GATT. The GATT is a general agreement on tariffs and trade under the World Trade Organization. So that shows you the drafters were very particular and specific on this. So clearly the national treatment policy here applies, seems it takes on a national and international perspective as far as the GATT is concerned. So Article 6, special and differential treatment. And this was also among the foundational principles that I mentioned, another Article 5 of the foundational argument. So meaning that in conformity with the objective of the AFCFTA in ensuring comprehensive and mutually beneficial trading goods, state parties provide flexibilities to other state parties at different levels of government or that have individual specificities as recognized by these flexibilities shall include, among others, special consideration and an additional transition period in the implementation of this agreement. That's why I mentioned that there's a transitional period for countries like Lesotho, LDCs, for them to comply with this agreement. So that is also recognized. And this is where sometimes international trade becomes very tricky. Part 3, liberalization of trade. Article 7, import duties. The parties shall progressively eliminate import duties or charges having an equivalent effect on goods originating from the territory of any other state party in accordance with their schedule of tariff concessions contained Annex 1 to this protocol. So countries are supposed to submit their tariff concessions and show which goods they're supposed to eliminate import duties on. And at the end of their transition periods, it should be about up to 90% of their goods. So you're allowed to, certain sensitive products, let's say, if they're the major products from your country, you're allowed to protect them to some extent and leave the same tariff rates. But for these others, eliminate or even bring them to zero for 90% of those goods. For products subject to liberalization, state parties shall not impose any new import duties or charges having equivalent effect on goods originating from the territory of any other state party except as provided for under this protocol. So one states that you're supposed to eliminate, then two says you shall not impose new import duties. So meaning that at the coming into force of this agreement, you already have your goods, which have been trading in across the country. So those ones you eliminate. But if there are now new import duties that you want to impose out of a blue after the coming into force of this agreement, which is already in force since July 2019, you're supposed to do it under certain qualifications under this protocol. You don't just do it arbitrarily. So that is a differentiation between 1 and 2. That's under Article 7. So there are exceptions to this. This shall not include internal taxes. So import duty does not include internal taxes. So you cannot reduce taxes on internal taxes, say VAT and what have you. Anti-dumping or countervailing measures imposed in accordance with the GATT and the World Trade Organization Agreement on Subsidies and Countervailing Measures. Duties or levies imposed in relation to safeguards, other fees or charges imposed consistently with Article 8 of the GATT. So when it comes to safeguards and anti-dumping countervailing measures, there are exceptions to your obligations. Article 8, schedule tariff concessions. Each party shall apply preferential tariffs to imports from other states in accordance with its schedule of tariff concessions contained in Annex 1 to this protocol and in conformity with adopted tariff modalities. the schedule of tariff concessions, adopted tariff modalities, and outstanding work on the tariff modalities to be negotiated, which shall be an integral part. So like I mentioned, that is still a very contentious area. Countries are still negotiating. Others are just still submitting. For example, the ESC, as a customs union, agreed to submit their schedule of tariff concessions, I think, this month. So that is a very important area. Notwithstanding the provisions of this protocol, certain parties that are members of other RECs, which have attained among themselves higher levels of elimination of customs duties and trade barriers than those provided for in this protocol, shall maintain, where possible, improve upon those higher levels of trade liberalization among themselves. This is a restatement. The other provision of RECs shall be the building blocks. So, is again, this protocol is also recognizing that where already there's a high level of elimination of custom duties and barriers, those countries should maintain them under their different regional economic groupings. So that principle keeps on restating itself all over, because the ASCFTA is trying to be as practical as much as possible, because otherwise there'll be problems. I mean, you're trying now to impose a new trade arrangement that is trying to override everything. That would be problematic. Countries are allowed to take their time and as much as possible eliminate what they can eliminate. So are there any questions on that?
No, you already answered that.
So quantitative restrictions, this is now Article 9. General elimination of quantitative restrictions. State parties shall not impose quantitative restrictions on imports from all exports to other state parties except as provided for this protocol and the annex. So the annex is there. I think that one we shall discuss.
So what does that quantitative restriction mean?
You're basically putting a number, a limit on what can be put.
Oh, okay. 10.
10.
Export duties.
The parties may regulate the export duties or charges having equivalent effect on goods originating from their territories. Any export duties or taxes imposed or in connection with the exportation of goods applied pursuant to this article shall be applied to goods exported to all destinations on a non-discriminatory basis. So export duty, where it says under 3, a state party that introduces export duties or taxes on or in connection with the exportation of goods in accordance with paragraph 2 of this article shall notify the secretariat 90 days from the introduction of the said export duties or taxes. So this is now where they're coming into force of export duties here. You're now applying new export duties. Where you're applying those new export duties, you're under an obligation to notify the AFCFTA secretariat within 90 days from the introduction. So Article 11, on modification of schedules of tariff concessions. In exceptional circumstances, a party may request for modification of its schedules of tariff concessions.
What kind of exceptional circumstances?
Now, that be really exceptional. It means that the AFCFTA has come into force. We have agreed, and now we are moving forward to eliminate tariffs on these goods. Now, for you along the way, the country says, but no, we made a mistake. We want to increase tariffs again. So what is the protocol saying? That you cannot do that arbitrarily. The exceptional circumstances that must accrue, but also you have to deal with the secretariat. In such exceptional circumstances, a state party, fair enough, are referred to as a modifying state party, shall submit to the secretariat a written request together with evidence of the exceptional circumstances of such a request. You write to the secretariat informing them with evidence of those exceptional circumstances.
Okay, I'll just say something. In November, I think, 2017, Nigerian government increased tariff on wheat importation by 15%. There was even a negotiation with PBAN, which is the association that, you know, bakery owners, people who use wheat flour as a primary production material. We have a quantity issue in Nigeria. We don't produce enough wheat to make bread locally, and now you're increasing tariff on wheat importation. For countries like Nigeria, where we don't have that strong communication between governments and the stakeholders in my industry, how does this play out? How do we ensure that they don't make these unilateral decisions on, you know, tariff concessions? How do we mitigate against that?
The other question I have is, how strong are the trade support institutions? Is there a Chamber of Commerce, for example, in Nigeria?
Yes, we do. After the AFCFTA thing came up, I said, okay, this is my time to kind of make some noise and then push this agenda to ensuring that you don't just arbitrarily increase tariff on wheat importation. I can't even go locally and produce wheat in Nigeria. I can't. We have to import this thing. Now you increase tariff. I'm like a middle player. I don't have access to the source of my value chain. I'm still a middle player. So if I'm not able to access that, I just feel tossed in between. This Article 11, particularly, I spent so much time reading this. That's why I have set up a group of other female businesses to come together to form like an advocacy group to ensuring that we also put our voices out there to talk about these things and then, you know, collaborate.
I've seen your National Action Committee and the AFCFTA. You should look it up after. It's quite strong. And that Afro champions are quite strong in their doing. But importantly, we should also strengthen, like you mentioned, our domestic trade support institutions that can engage the stakeholders. They have very strong persuasive power on the government. Rules of origin is very important. Many trade agreements have really not helped the local man because of very strict rules of origin. Article 14 is on trade facilitation, the simplification and creating of efficiencies through customs. The party shall take appropriate measures, including arrangements regarding customs cooperation and mutual administrative assistance in accordance with the provisions of Annex 3 on customs cooperation and mutual administrative assistance. And Annex with customs cooperation, trade facilitation, take appropriate measures, including arrangements regarding trade facilitation in accordance with the provisions of Annex 4 or trade facilitation. And Annex 4 is more or less word for word with the World Trade Organization argument on trade facilitation. Mm. Article 16 is on transit arrangements. Is an annex on transit, which is annex 8. Trade remedies, we had discussed these ones, anti-dumping and countervailing are important because they allow countries to derogate from their obligations where things are threatening their economies and perhaps are not good for their industries. Safeguards, Article 18, we mentioned that. Something threatens the domestic industry, a serious injury. You're allowed to increase tariffs, even block a product. Preferential safeguards, state parties may apply safeguards measures to situations where there is a sudden surge, that's the key word, sudden surge of a product imported into a state party under conditions which cause or threaten to cause serious injury to domestic producers. That's a key word.
Sir, I think that has happened to many of the Chinese products coming into Nigeria. There's been this surge of cheaper, inferior quality products. We actually did have that issue here in Nigeria. So does that also address quality of products?
Well, it could be both. Did the government in Nigeria apply any measures?
Yes, they did, actually.
Article 20 is on cooperation related to anti-dumping, countervailing, and safeguard measures. And this is also a very important one, which I'll also tie into when it comes to sanitary and phytosanitary measures. So these countries are supposed to harmonize their standards.
Mm.
If in Uganda, there's a body called the Uganda National Bureau of Standards. Now, if Uganda being the ESC, which is the customs union, if UNBS, that's the Uganda National Bureau of Standards, gives a stamp and certifies a product as being legitimate, then the Kenyan authority, the equivalent authority, should allow that product because it's legitimate. The standards
exactly. Exactly. That's the problem right now, because if my Nigerian authorities or Nigerian bodies harmonize the standards, is it the same standard that's being used to also judge that product in a country like maybe Ghana or Kenya? That question hasn't been answered.
And you find SMEs and traders suffering because of that.
Yes.
Because our authority was trying to just practice protectionism.
Okay, so can't we have standardized African standards or international standards that every country complies with so that it's just uniform?
Should be uniform. And there's a proper Annex 9 here on trade remedies and AFCFTA guidelines on the implementation of trade remedies, which I think is a document that is still being worked on. But that should help us in standardizing. Annex 6 is also relating to standards, which is similar to Article 22, which is on sanitary and phytosanitary measures. Countries are allowed to impose duties on things that threaten their plants, their animal health, and what have you. But they should be qualified. Again, scientific evidence must be there. Even where there are provisional measures, they must be supported by evidence. They cannot be arbitrary or protectionist. Complementary policies, special economic arrangements, zones. State parties may support the establishment and operation of special economic zones for the purpose of accelerating development. Products benefiting from these special economic arrangements shall be subject to any regulations that may be developed by the Council of Ministers. This hasn't been developed yet. Trade of products manufactured in special economic arrangements zones within the AFCFTA shall be subject to the provisions of rules of origin under Annex 2. Infant industries, for the purposes of protecting an infant industry having strategic at the national level, a state party may provided that it has taken reasonable steps to overcome the difficulties related to such an industry, impose measures for protecting such an industry. Such measures shall be applied on a non-discriminatory basis and for a specified period of time. The Council of Ministers shall adopt guidelines. So this is a very interesting one for SMEs who are scared of the competition. But the guidelines will be developed, so let us see how that works out. Article 25, transparency notification requirements for state trading enterprises. Ensure transparency and activities of state trading shall notify such enterprises to the Secretariat for Transmission.
Irene, I'm hoping there are benchmarking opportunities for us if our countries are not doing the right things. Like, I would also like a list of all the bodies that ensure enforcement and, you know, kind of bring more clarity to those complex deals.
That is very possible. Like I said, information is the biggest problem. State trading enterprises are another very interesting thing. They're usually like government authorities that are tasked with certain responsibilities. For example, when it comes to exports and imports and what have you. But of course, they're important for SMEs. They're usually like government or non-governmental enterprises that usually help with marketing and selling goods. I believe they're there in Nigeria, of course, like a marketing board, export marketing board, something like that.
Okay, I'll check that out.
Such authorities are usually very important. This agreement also attempts to regulate them in order to ensure the transparency of the activities. State parties shall notify such enterprises to the Secretariat for Transmission to other state parties. For purposes of this article, STE refers to governmental and non-governmental enterprises, including marketing boards, which have been granted exclusive or special rights or privileges, including statutory or constitutional powers, in the exercises of which they influence through their purchases or sales the level or direction of exports or imports. So these are just state trading enterprises. This article is also trying to guard against subsidies. Article 26 is on general exceptions. Subject to the requirement that such measures are not applied in a manner which would constitute a means of arbitrary or discrimination between state parties where the same conditions prevail or a disguised restriction on international trade. Nothing is protocol shall be construed as preventing the adoption or enforcement of measures by the state that are necessary to protect public morals or to maintain public order, necessary to protect human, animal, or plant life or health, related to the importation and exportation of gold or silver, related to the production of prison labor, necessary to secure compliance with laws or regulations which are not consistent with the provisions of this protocol, imposed for the protection of national treasures, artistic, related to conservation of books. So there are a number of those. So those are just tying to the trade remedies and safeguards. So countries are allowed to come up with certain measures that are general exceptions to trade or to the agreement. Oh, they also call security measures. So, for example, where a country's security is threatened, the country can restrict trade. So nothing is protected because you require any state party to furnish any information, the disclosure of which is considered contrary to its essential security interests, or prevent any state party from taking any action which considers necessary for the protection of its security interests. This is a very interesting one because there was a dispute not so long ago between Ukraine and Russia. Where Russia invoked that article is, I think, 21 of the GATT, arguing that by Ukraine trading with them, there were certain things that they wanted to do because of the politics surrounding Russia and the USA. So they thought maybe through Ukraine, America was trying to do certain things. So they blocked them from trading. And of course, the World Trade Organization said they did not provide sufficient evidence for that, and it ruled against them. The border between Uganda and Rwanda has been closed for the last 2 years. Traders have been affected. Most of the products are in Rwanda. But it was blocked because of reasons we don't know up to now. Apparently, there are political issues. What does a common man have to do with those political issues? So, someone took the matter to court. We were waiting for the pronouncement from the East Africa Court of Justice. A security measure, in as much as it is allowed by the AFCFTA or by the GATT, must be qualified. Can't just take it out of the blue. Okay, balance of payments. Where a state party is in critical balance of payment difficulties or under imminent threat thereof, or has a need to safeguard its external financial position difficulties, and that has taken all reasonable steps to overcome the difficulties, may adopt appropriate restrictive measures in accordance with international rights and obligations, including those under the World Trade Organization, Articles of Agreement of the IMF, So I think you're seeing where international trade gets interesting. Country will restrict trade under a secret security measure. Country will say balance of payment is suffering. Country will say... So a state party concerned having adopted or maintained such measures shall inform the other state parties forthwith and submit as soon as possible a time schedule for their removal. So there's a limitation on such an arrangement, but the parties follow that. You just close, not inform me. So you're supposed to inform other state parties and show them that I'm only doing this temporarily. So technical assistance and capacity building is important. People need to be trained. That is perhaps the most important thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Information is not down to the common man, to the lower SMB, to the people at the grassroots, and they're all wondering what's the importance of this thing. Just see them in the press, and they see politicians saying things, but they don't know what's going on. So dispute settlement, there's a full protocol on settlement of disputes. Like I mentioned, the problem with this settlement of disputes, it's like the World Trade Organization, countries are only ones allowed to take on each other. That's why I insist that we must use our regional economic communities and take advantage. ECOWAS Court of Justice, the East African Community Court of Justice, that allow individuals to take on states. Otherwise, yeah, you're not sure if a state will actually represent you. So if you went and told your government to take on Ghana, will your government really represent your interests? People are arguing that, but this AFCFTA does not allow a private party, a private businessman, to go to court. So it's a problem.
So let's hope that we can actually start seeing change in this regard.
Well, let's hope so, but African countries taking on each other, that diplomatic crisis will be a problem. Anyway, there have been a couple of them at the International Court of Justice. You've seen Somalia taking on Kenya. They're there, but they really have to be very extreme. And for some reason, they don't consider our traders, despite the fact that they are literally the drivers of the economy. So, implementation monitoring. So they are supposed to monitor these things and make sure that the objectives of the protocol are achieved. And there's a committee that is supposed to be set up on trading goods. I hope you and I can become part of it.
Honestly, I was going to ask you, because we, the stakeholders, have to be part of that committee, because they can't just make rules over our heads.
Put politicians there, guys who have no clue about what's going on. So implement it, monitor these things and see what's going on and ensure that there's even a requirement for them to submit annual factual reports. Facilitate the process of implementation.
Awesome. I need to give you a round of applause.
Juliet, what are your parting shots from this great discussion that we've had?
Thank you, Ivan, for such an insightful dissecting of the protocols. I gained a lot of insight. I think I kind of gleaned up like 4 or 5 points. One of the key things I take away from this is capacity building. We need to have information as far what are the opportunities that this AFCFTA trade deals present for us as small businesses. We're like new entrants into this whole trade thing. So capacity building is key, which I'm going to take home to my own group as well, and we'll keep building on that. And things like benchmarking opportunities with other countries that are doing better than us, you should kind of see where we have gaps and close up that gaps. And then countries need to learn how to harmonize the standards. I feel like that's one area where it's all lip service for now. We want to see practical steps taken to harmonize standards. So if I take my standards to a country like Ghana or any other country in Africa, it's still the same. I don't have to go through another bureaucratic protocol to ensuring that I meet their own internal standards. Also, I've learned now that I need to hold my domestic trade support groups accountable, because that's their job, to ensuring that our products meet the standards and we're able to also leverage on the opportunities that the AFCFTA brings to us as well. So I think for me, those are the salient points that I'm taking home from our conversation today. And I still look forward to also being part of other bodies that kind of bring more clarity to all the opportunities that this might present as well. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Juliet. My parting shot will be, and I'll also glean off what you just said, it is important to bring the AFCFTA to the common man. And from what I've understood from talking to an SME like you, there's a dearth of information at the lower end of a businessman. So let's continue fighting. Let's continue advocating for the AFCFTA. And I'm grateful for platforms like Dev Dispatch that are contributing towards this end. Bye.
Thank you. Bye.